Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Monday, April 13th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre. The terrorism enhancement charges against the RNC-8 have been dropped.
Solidarity for death row journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And the captain of the Maersk Alabama is safely on his way home, although a congressman flying out of Mogadishu Airport was fired upon. Whether we're by pirates or not, we don't know.
Portland area weather, showers in the north, slight chance of afternoon thunderstorms, highs around 50, and snow in the mountains. There's a winter weather advisory for the North Cascades. Tonight and tomorrow, showers and lows in the 30s.
News from around Cascadia. Portland is the epicenter of green innovation, from the village building convergence to Earth Day. Coming this May, the Living Future Conference takes the movement another step along the road ahead. My guest this morning is Gina Franzosa with the Cascadia Region Green Building Council. Good morning, Gina. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell people a little bit about the Living Future Conference and how they can, of course, get involved?
Yes, absolutely. So the Living Future Conference is for the most forward-thinking members of the design and construction community. The conference is in its third year running now, and it's full of engaging, inspirational, educational sessions. It's not merely your talking heads in the front of the room, but invites audience participation. Leading-edge thinkers like Janine Benyus will be delivering keynote speeches, and there's tons of also community activities around town. So it'll be, you know, folks from around the continent, and a great networking opportunity as well.
So what's the website for listeners who might want to find out more?
Yeah, absolutely. It's cascadiagbc.org, and you'll see a link to Living Future.
This sounds like something that KBOL listeners would be interested in. We'll have you back again later on as we get closer to the actual event, which is on May 6th and 7th, is it not?
That's correct.
Thank you so much. My guest has been Gina Franzosa with Cascadia Region Green Building Council. Thanks so much for that, Gina.
Thank you, Chris.
Box Canyon Dam will become friendlier to fish under a federally mediated deal that ends a decade of litigation over the structure's new operating license. The agreement between the Kalispell Tribe and the Panderay County Public Utility District will help repair environmental damage caused by the dam when it was built in the 50s.
Washington Closure Hanford has finished an expansion of the landfill in central Hanford for low-level radioactive waste, just in time to do it all over again. The latest expansion of the Environmental Restoration Disposal Facility, or ERDF, will hold an additional 2.8 million tons of contaminated soil, building rubble, and other debris left from the production of plutonium at Hanford for the nation's nuclear weapons program. Plans are being made to add double that space of the expansion that was just completed.
The monthly jobless numbers for Oregon are due out today, with the state already the third worst in the country for unemployment. And this is unequivocally the result of bad decisions on the part of management of the state's major employers. It's easy to justify forcing the workforce to cut back on food, housing, and medical care when all you have to lose is a beach house or two and the chalet.
Exactly. There's been a lot of debate in Oregon over whether public employees get an especially cushy deal, particularly when it comes to health and retirement benefits. It's an issue that's growing nationally as well. USA Today reports that new federal statistics show the benefits for public employees around the nation are now outpacing those for private employees. Last year, the value of public employee benefits rose by 69 cents an hour compared to 23 cents for private employees. But, come on, 69 cents an hour, 23 cents an hour. The people who make the decisions, the people who are at the top that deal out those pennies one by one, are raking in billions still, even in this economy.
A woman accused of picking daffodils on city property was arrested and given a theft citation in Centralia, Washington. Police say a man called last week to complain about the flower picker, and an officer found the 48-year-old woman at Providence Centralia Hospital. She said she'd picked the flowers for a family member who was a patient. That's pretty amazing. And George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld are still out there.
Picking daisies. This recession has hurt construction hard, but workers aren't giving up. At the Northwest College of Construction, apprentices are holding out hope that the economy will turn around. Construction trade organizations founded the NWCC to address an industry shortage of skilled labor. Most Oregon industries have been hurt, but none more than construction. Maybe it's time to start deconstructing the abandoned rural slums that blight the landscape and rebuilding the inner city core.
The Obama administration's American Recovery and Reinvestment Act offers millions of dollars to retrain workers or give health coverage to those who've lost their jobs. But for people laid off from bankrupt companies that are self-insured, there's no employee-paid COBRA coverage. Health insurance is one of the first things to go. That could leave laid-off workers with medical claims that weren't paid prior to the bankruptcy filing.
In the surest sign yet of the power of post-RNC court solidarity, Ramsey County Attorney Susan Gertner has dropped two of four unfounded charges against the RNC 8. Listeners, of course, will remember that people were arrested for protesting at the Republican National Convention in Minneapolis and were slapped with charges of all sorts, pretty much anything that the imaginations of the Minnesota police and FBI could come up with. Caving into months and months of public pressure, Gertner dropped one count of conspiracy to commit riot in furtherance of terrorism and one count of conspiracy to commit criminal damage to property in furtherance of terrorism. Here to talk about the significance of this is Rob Cernick, a member himself of the RNC 8. Greetings. Congratulations, Rob.
Hey, Chris. Thanks a lot. I've been walking on air for the last couple of days.
Well, what do you think? I know that the public pressure was a contributing factor. Why do you think? Is this anything at all to do with a sort of warming climate in the new administration? Or what do you attribute this to?
Well, you know, Susan Gertner, who is the Ramsey County, the head prosecutor, she's in charge of all of it. She's running for governor, and she has been getting a lot of pressure from progressives and people within Minnesota people are saying they're not going to support someone who wants to charge protesters as terrorists. And so this was a very politically expedient move for her. It allows her to say, hey, look, I'm progressive. I'm not doing this. But, you know, overall, we still have these conspiracy charges. The complaint is the same. The complaint has not changed. They charged us with was the conspiracy to riot and the furtherance of terrorism, and then they added the three other charges. So this is a way for Susan to save face and still be able to prosecute us. And this is just as important now for people to keep the pressure up. They're trying to, you know, not only were we preemptively arrested, which was sort of fits in with the doctrine of preemptive strikes of the Bush administration, but, you know, using conspiracy is such a vague, broad, slippery slope to start charging people with. They are trying to hold us responsible for the actions of everybody that came to St. Paul in September to protest.
Yeah, how do they actually go about proving conspiracy?
Well, you know, conspiracy charges are a prosecutor's friend. Whenever they're not able to go after, you know, say the mafia, they go ahead and say, well, you talked to this person, you did this for this person, it's a conspiracy. They're saying that because we were the ones responsible for planning and executing the infrastructural logistics during the RNC, they're saying that we are responsible for that. They're using the case of the Texas Two, which are the two kids from Austin, Texas, that were charged federally with Molotovs. They're saying because one of our members went to Texas, did a presentation with those two kids who they were at this presentation. They're saying, you know, A leads to B leads to C because we did this presentation. We are responsible for what David McKay and Bradley Crowder did, which is furthest. None of us have even known those two people, and yet they're trying to connect the dots in a way that make us responsible for what they're doing.
Well, it's almost a compliment, isn't it? They really seem to admire your organizational abilities.
Yeah.
So there is always that. Okay, all of you are rather political people, and I imagine you're not just sort of sitting there playing chess, waiting to see what will happen. What's the atmosphere like for activism in Minneapolis right now?
Well, I think after last week, I think people are feeling, you know, it's nice to have a victory for once, but we're only partway there. It's definitely not an end game in the game of chess by any means. It's more the opening salvos in a long match. People are feeling really good. Post RNC, there's been a lot of work in the community around food issues. A lot of people are involved in anti-foreclosure type events. People have not been cowered at all by the fear of being arrested for being organizers. If anything, this victory has sort of re-empowered people.
And Rob, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, good. Listen, thank you so much for letting us know what's going on out there in Minnesota, and we'd like to have you back again soon in the near future. Thank you so much. That was, of course, Rob Cernik, one of the RNC 8 defendants and confirmed non-terrorist. Thank you so much, Rob.
No, thank you, Chris, and thank you, Kabu, for all your support.
This is International Week of Solidarity for Mumia. Death Row journalist Mumia Abu Jamal is currently asking the U.S. Supreme Court to reconsider, or rather to consider his case for a new guilt phase trial. Abu Jamal's death sentence was somewhat overturned in 2001 when the U.S. District Court ruled that he needs a new sentencing phase trial if the DA still wants to execute. The U.S. Third Circuit Court affirmed this ruling in March 2008, but Abu Jamal has still never left his death row cell. And the Philadelphia DA is appealing this 2001-2008 ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. If the DA wins their appeal, Abu Jamal could then be executed without a new sentencing phase trial. A decision from the court on whether it will consider these two appeals is expected early this year.
Thanks for that, Liam. Well, Cuba, here we come. So it turns out that the Obama administration has taken that giant 90-mile step and made it possible for travel to Cuba to be legally undertaken. Here to just talk about that, of course, is KBOO Spencer Raymond, who joins us every morning. Good morning, Spencer. What's going on with Cuba?
Yeah, good morning, Chris. Some breaking news out of Washington this morning. Obama is expected to announce today, probably this afternoon, he is going to lift travel restrictions for families of Cubans, for Cuban Americans and their families to travel to that communist island nation that has been restricted for so long. One thing that's important to point out is that there's no indication that he's totally lifting the trade embargo, but it is looking like he will lift trade restrictions on a certain number of goods, but the specifics on that we don't know for sure yet. Remember, Obama talked about improving relations with Cuba during the campaign, and this is all in a step of bringing democracy towards Cuba, that term we've heard for so long, you know, back in the Bush years of trying to make this country democratic. The Bush policy was isolating them. That would turn them democratic. Obama now thinks that if you can open up trade a little bit, open up travel for relatives of Cubans, then the nation can become a little bit more democratic.
Winning the world one shopping trip at a time seems to be America's policy as far as foreign policy goes. Thank you so much for that. That, of course, is KBOO's Spencer Raymond joining us as he does every weekday morning with GCTIP. Thank you so much, Spencer.
Thanks.
Mortar shells were fired at Mogadishu Airport as a plane carrying a U.S. congressman took off safely from the Somali capital today. Donald Payne, chair of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa, said he met with Somalia's president and prime minister during his one-day visit to discuss piracy, security, and cooperation between Somalia and the U.S.
As far as I understand it, that's normal when you take off in an airplane from Mogadishu International. It's kind of like a little send-off from the local.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Monday, April 13th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Tammy Dean. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, If You Love This Planet, Dr. Caldicott addresses the movement against vaccines. Then at 11, Jane Brody on Health Watch. And 11:30, Teresa Mitchell interviews theoretical physicist Michio Kaku.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.